From the creators of Stacks and Second Left, welcome to The Sauce with Don and Till. Your go-to for honest conversations on all things life, love, business, and everything in between. Because every day needs a little sauce.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of The Sauce. It's season 3 with your favorite host, now on video, Don and
Till. I feel like I'm nervous now that it's on video.
No, don't be nervous.
I'm nervous.
Just ignore the cameras. Pretend that
there's
they don't exist.
There's so many cameras. Hi guys. Thanks for coming back to season 3. Sorry it's taken a little while.
No, I think Till always like gets on my case about the fact that we have such a break between episodes, but I think our flow to this point has been, you know, we do about 10 to 12 episodes, which usually is somewhere around 3 months, 12 weeks. We take a bit of a break because that's when our trips are usually scheduled, and then we get reinvigorated with passion and we come back and we scale up.
We scale up. And we're scaling up this time because we're back and we've got a plan, we're filming. I'm happy to be back.
Well, it's pretty good. I think it's actually blown my mind. We've been to a couple events lately and every time we go, people are coming up to us saying, hey, we love the podcast.
I know. It's people so flattering.
It's actually mind-blowing. Like, so people come up at the last 3 or 4 events and said, hey, we love your podcast, and they asked us to take a photo. No one has even said anything about all the cool collections and all the other cool stuff we've done. But
sorry about Stacks. Just to clap the pod. So how are you? What's been going on?
It's been, I mean, this is Black Friday week, so yeah,
well,
we couldn't have chosen
Stacks Black Friday week.
We couldn't have chosen a time more occupied with activity to do a video recording of a podcast. But
if you want something done, give it to the busiest person.
Is that a Kris Jenner quote?
Yeah, she probably
I feel like
that.
That's something Kris Jenner would say.
Why can't you just think it was me?
No, I think it was you, but I also think it was Kris Jenner.
We had our Black Friday VIP. We've done 2 VIP sales now, which has been wild. So the second one finished at 9 a.m. this morning.
And then so part 3 is coming.
Yeah, the official Black Friday sale this Friday. It would have already happened by the time this one comes out.
Yeah, you don't have to do the promo. you're like in promo mode.
I've been doing is Black Friday promo.
We've been working hard on this one. Yeah. I want to say, and I know a lot of our Facebook VIP group members are going to be listening to this, because that's become like the power source of the brands and the energy, and that's the space
where I spend my whole day now.
Those, like, you guys, I mean, I'm going to say you guys, because I know that the people that are listening to this right now, a good portion of you guys are in the group, and like, this group has just become our little community, our ride or dies, and
it is so good. Like, people are jumping in to answer each other's questions. Like, there is not a question that goes unanswered about Stacks in that group. It's incredible.
I just want to say thank you. Yeah. I think it's actually crazy because, you know, we had this this conversation internally where it's like, hey, should we start referring to ourselves as the Stacks fam again? And I started thinking about, you know, 7, 8 years when we started the brand, and I started thinking about, I can literally remember the people I was messaging on Instagram and Messenger at the time. I remember them by their name, by their face. And when I said Stacks Fam, I had like this flashing of everyone that supported us like on day one. And then I looked in the group and the same people are in there. And you know, it's such a special thing. And we've started speaking about, you know, what the group and the community means to us. And I don't want to do stuff that's transactional, right? Mm-hmm. I don't just want to do stuff where we're trying to sell a product and then we talk to you. Like, those are our people. Like, you guys are our people, and it's just fun. Like, I think you and I are both buzzing this week just because we've had such cool engagement with these people.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you want to be part of the Stacks fam.
I feel like it was the biggest plug.
Come join the Facebook group. Make sure you're in the VIP list and then join the Facebook group.
But make an effort to get to know what we've done and come and participate. You know, the group is fun. It's always going to be fun. I'm going to kick people out that are bringing negative vibes.
We haven't kicked anyone out. No one's bringing negative vibes.
No, but you know, you get people that just enter Facebook groups and they just want to start drama. This is an anti-drama zone,
That's
bro.
Not what happens in this group.
Not in this space.
Speaking of Stacks fam and OGs, today we want to talk about like the story and like how did Stacks start? Because we get asked that all the time. We get asked that in interviews all the time. And obviously when you do an interview, you get like, there's a lot of questions that the host has and they kind of brush over. How did Stacks start? Okay, cool. 80K in debt. Okay, cool. Blah, 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 blah. So you might have heard like stories like that or like our answers, John's answers to how he started Stacks. But I don't think you actually heard like the emotional, like what you actually went through.
I think a few levels have been unlocked in the story lately. just to qualify what Till says, you know, whenever people want to do interviews or ask questions, we get the same questions all the time. And, you know, sometimes it gets a bit boring to, and I mean that respectfully, but, you know, you have your story and you have the answers that you prepare for the shallow responses, because the in-depth version of that is insane.
It's more than just like one answer to one question.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, we've lived through 7 or 8 years of, you know, the craziest ride. And also at the time, I think only recently have I realized that we have such an interesting influence in people that follow us lives, especially around like business and around the things we've done. I also used to get put off by, you know, people that have started a business, I've done something on social media, and then all of a sudden they sell a course, mm-hmm. or they transition their ambition into like something that sells. And I never want to become that person that, you know, talks about the story and then, you know, all of a sudden I'm selling a course and I'm trying to teach people how to do something that I haven't won it yet. So I think that's like the number one reason we haven't really jumped too deep into the story.
Until now.
Until now.
No, so I thought maybe, do you want to chat about like your background, like what you were doing previously, what you were doing when we met, that kind of thing?
And you just have to make sure that you hijack the story once you come into the picture.
Don't worry. When it's my turn to talk, I will be there.
Because the first segment is my history. And we're going to do a couple of podcasts where we talk about...
I reckon this one can be broken up into like a few as well, because I'm going to ask you questions.
Okay.
I know what questions to ask to get the info out of you.
Okay, but there's a whole background story in your recruitment. Like, we're going to be here for 3 hours.
We'll do a life before Stacks for me.
I love it.
And this can be life before Stacks. And as you started Stacks, Muscle Stacks.
And I think that's important, babe, because I think, you know, a lot of people now realize that I started the brand, right? And the story I always tell people is like, I started the brand, you came along and made it better. And that's when it worked out. because I can't ever take the credit for doing everything we've done. Like, it really was a joint union, and we've done it together. But, you know, I might have taken the first step. But when we get to that part of the story, I think people are going to enjoy the fact that when you realize, when people come together and work on something, it becomes magic, right? Mm-hmm. So your history and what you've gone through to that point actually adds so much value in our story. But anyway, the story.
Take us back to little old dog.
What's the starting point? You know, people often ask, when did Stack start? And I always think about this, when did I start the business? Like, I always think like, what was the starting point? And then I have this flashing that goes back in my mind of like my whole like highlight reel of my life. And I think the starting point that I often want to give was like the day I was born. What I mean by
Stack started in 1989.
You remembered? No, and what I mean by that is...
Oh, I'm dead.
No, why I think that's important is because I look at like all the entrepreneurial stuff I'd done, you know, growing up in South Africa, to a family that wasn't rich at all, like a single mom, lived with my grandparents pretty much my entire, you know, childhood life. And mom didn't have a lot, didn't really, we did not have much, but we always hustled and was always entrepreneurial. And I remember particularly in like grade 1, 2, and 3, our school would have like a raffle, and my goodness, you wouldn't do it in this day and age, but people would, we would go down to our neighbors' houses and knock and try and sell raffle tickets. And at that point I sort of realized trade and hustle, and I had the confidence to go to these houses and knock, and I always used to win. I always used to win the picnic basket because I was the prize in our school. So I was the number one picnic basket.
So Susan had a lot of picnic baskets.
Susan hustled me out, and then...
No wonder she collects teacups. It started from the picnic baskets.
Literally. Shout out to my South African mum. And then I, you know, fast forwarding, I started working when I was 13, and I started, actually in junior school, I started melting candles and crayons. And I started selling candles for Valentine's gifts, you know, for like the smallest.
Romantic.
I was such a hustler. And I used to hustle these kids, my peers, to spend, you know, 20 cents and 30 cents in buying these candles that are made out of chocolate molds. But I think the reason I highlight those stories is because I think for a lot of entrepreneurs and people, like the background, your history and what you've done in life really takes an effect in like, what you decide to do. And I think a lot of people overlook that. Mm. A lot of people look at their back-end stories or their life stories, and they discredit a lot of the experiences that can be transferred into what you do currently.
It's kind of like finding your passion, right? Like, you don't necessarily like have like a brainwave. You're like, oh my God, my passion is flowers. Sorry, I just saw the flowers. My passion is beautiful flowers. My passion is it. Like, it's like you just realize like it's like a collection of all of the things that you love and you have done really well throughout your life. That's what ends up being your passion, right? And I think that starts from a young age as well, which is what you're saying.
Well, it becomes part of who you are. And it's those 1% of the things you enjoy that you can transfer. It's not about the job. It's those things in the job you can do. So it's such an important part. I think people overlook that. So, you know, moving forward, I worked in retail from the age of 30, and I used to pack shoes.
Is that legal?
No, it's definitely okay. Not legal. But this is also South Africa back in those days. So I was working in the stock room of my uncle's sports shop at 12 or 13. Not old enough to be earning money, but they used to pay me in like faulty goods.
Oh, there you go.
But to someone that didn't have a lot, like that was massive.
Yeah.
Like, I used to get Reebok shoes, Reebok running shoes, even though they, you
know,
storing
them in your picnic basket.
They might have they were worn or they had holes, but to me that was like the coolest thing. And then I started learning, you know, I also got a lot of recognition in the sports shop. Like, everyone was like, wow, that's Don. He packs the stock room so nice, and he cleans the kitchenette. And I used to clean out the fridge, and I used to.
It's all making sense now. All these little tendencies that you have.
The OCD. Mm. But those points are important because I realized I took a lot of pride in the micro detail of my work back at that stage, and without even realizing. And my uncle used to taught me a lot of lessons about, you know, how to talk to people on the shop floor, and how, when you look at a retail space, you know, what the 1%ers are and how you identify. I think I remember that we packed shoe boxes in a straight line, and he looked back, and in those days, you know, the army was such a thing. People were taught to like be very disciplined, and we had to see a straight line in these shoe boxes. And I think that put a lot of emphasis into focusing on the detail. Anyway, fast forward a bit, I ended up working legally in the business and started earning money. And I just learned to sell. Like, I learned to hustle. I used to sell, and I was a casual, and I was the best salesman in the store because I could talk. And I really had a passion for sportswear, particularly running shoes. And then I would be working every single spare second that I could get. You know, I didn't really have weekends and hang out with my friends. Like, my fun was working. I go to school, play sport during the week, and then on Fridays after school, I get picked up and go to work. And we'd work till like, you do late night trade back in those days. And, you know, the mall would close at 10 p.m. And I think that it was an hour drive from where we were living at the time. And then I did that for, you know, my whole high school duration. And then my uncle actually got an internship he got a job at Nike. And then, you know, they had to fix their sample room. It was a mess. And who did my uncle call? Me. So I came in and sorted out the sample room in like the school holidays. And that's when they offered me a bit of an internship. So I got offered an internship at Nike. But what was quite important, I think, at that point, and it's something I talk a lot about to a lot of people in school now, or some of the younger staff or younger people that DM me on IG that are asking for advice. I'm like, at that point, I learned that, you know, money wasn't the focal point of my job. It wasn't why I showed up to do it. It was part of the experience and the learning experience. So I didn't get paid for that internship. Obviously, it's an internship. You don't get paid. But I learned so much. And we
pay our interns now. Disclaimer.
We don't have interns. We have employees. Yes. We actually don't. That's something I think that's important.
I think the first time we had an intern, we told the next day, we're like, we have to pay you.
We felt bad.
Yeah, you're doing really good work.
So I learned at that point that, you know, money wasn't the objective here. And I remember being a sponge, and still to this day with everything we've built, not because it was Nike, not because it was the brand, it was the environment. I specifically look around seeing the office and all the cool people working in the office. And at that point, you know, culturally, South Africa was quite a diverse country, or had really worked on its diversity, you know, with all the problems that it's had. And I remember looking in the office in Joburg, which is a progressive part of South Africa. I looked around and I saw what diversity looked like to me at that point. Mm. And I saw the cool office setup, and I saw people just cool. I remember this one guy smelled cool and he had like this afro and they're all wearing Nike sneakers. It was just the coolest experience. Mm-hmm. So I had that reference programmed in my mind. And then my parents immigrated. They left South Africa a few years before me to the UK, and I stayed back because I finished school and then decided to join them. At that point, though, living in Australia. So I finished school, moved over to Australia, and I didn't have a job, didn't know what I wanted to do with my life, like zero clue. Like I just came over on a 3-month holiday and was like, oh, I don't know if I'm going to go back. And, lucky for us, I was able to get a visa and, you know, all of that. And then I got a job at Foot Locker because I knew how to sell and I love shoes. And Foot Locker was this cool brand, like global cool brand. We didn't have it in South Africa. I saw it in all the movies.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in the city. I've never worked in the city. So the whole experience was like walking into a new culture, new environment. And I loved it. I don't know if people love their first jobs, if they appreciate what they do, but I worked at Foot Locker and it was like a dream.
My first job was at Leonard's Chicken. I lasted 2 shifts.
Was it a dream?
Not quite.
Were you good at selling chicken?
Terrible. I wore a hair clip and got a warning.
For wearing a hair clip?
Yeah.
Why?
Because you couldn't wear a hair clip at Leonard's. Who knows? But no, I can't relate, but I'm glad you enjoyed your first job.
Didn't you like give all the boys free chicken?
No, not
or something?
At Leonard's.
Or was it a different job?
Different job.
Well, that's an episode.
We've got this is your story, babe.
So I worked at Foot Locker and I probably was there for about 4 or 5 years. And loved it, learned a lot, loved the culture, loved sportswear, love fashion. I also at that point found a job at a gym because I thought, all right, I've got to do something with my life. I'm going to try and study PT. I'm going to work at a gym, become a personal trainer, because that's what most of us did back in those days when you didn't know what you want to do with your life, become a PT back then. And then you realize, fuck, PT work is hard work. So I have a huge respect for personal trainers that have made it successful. Mm. You know, the 4 a.m. get-ups, the split shifts, the work
you
that
kind
goes
of do,
into
you
it.
You kind of live the life of a PT. I mean, what are you, 3:30 a.m. wake up?
No, I think so many PTs get it, like great PTs get insulted because like so many people that don't know what they want to do decide, oh, I'm going to go study a PT course because the lifestyle looks fun. So I worked as a gym receptionist and, you know, lo and behold, the start times were 4 p.m. and
4 a.m.?
4 a.m., sorry. And love the community, love the environment. And I built a relationship at the gym and I was afforded the opportunity to open up a little supplement shop in the gym. And that's what I called Muscle Stacks. And, you know, I'm super grateful for the owner of the gym at that time because we built a good relationship and he literally gave me an opportunity and said, sure, sell supplements in the gym. You know, it's like I didn't have any reference, didn't have any background.
Did you sell your own supplements in the gym?
No, I retailed. So I would buy supplements from distributors and sell them to the gym. And he helped me build this little space in the gym, like this little kiosk booth that we turned into a store.
Were you making profit?
I was because I was selling. I knew how to sell. And I understood the principles of e-commerce and trade, and it was booming. So I did that for about 2 years. I still worked in the gym as a receptionist for the 2 years at the time. I still worked at Foot Locker. I hustled some of my PT friends to do the night shift, and you know, we sold smoothie shakes as well, like protein shakes. I had a little smoothie blender. We were selling protein. I got the PTs involved, and I gave them a commission. So they were running it at night. Didn't pay them a cent. They earned the commissions from it. So the system I built was pretty cool. It was fun.
It's so funny. There's like so many things that you say now that like you still use in life now. Not the not paying people. That's not what I mean. Just like little things. Like when you're talking about, obviously I know this story, but like hearing it from you again, like, sorry, if you're not watching this, Nan is just like escaping from my lap. You know, the fact that like you started with sneakers and you were like given these sneakers that were like broken or old stock or whatever, but like now you love sneakers and like obviously sneakers have like more of a meaning than just being a shoe. So maybe like when I look in your wardrobe, I won't tell you have like 20 of exactly the same shoe, but like little things like that. And then like little things like working on just like the way that you built relationships with people and you kind of, it all kind of keeps, what am I trying to say? It keeps like this.
It almost repeats. What are you doing?
Like intertwines. Everything from your past still kind of, you stayed in that industry. Like sneakers mean something. Fitness means something. You always had that passion for it.
It's your back references. Like it's who you are fundamentally. And I think so many people haven't tapped into, you know, who they are and what makes them tick and what can you formulate that from that. I'm going to sidestep. I was working as a youth development officer once and there was this person that hated her job. And, you know, her life wasn't fantastic. She hated a job, but she needed a job. And, you know, I said to her, I was like most people don't love their jobs. We all understand that employment is something you have to do. You know, you get up in the morning, you go work, you like it, but not a lot of people thrive. I said, find one thing you love about your job. And she said, my lunch break. And I thought, my goodness, like there's no hope here. But I think there's like things in your job that you can build a relationship with and love. And when you thrive in that environment, the rest unfolds. But I don't think people like really focus on like what makes them tick internally. So back to the story. I built up this little community. You know, in this process, I it's funny because one of the
this is in Perth, by the way.
So this was in Perth. Sorry, Canningvale. Shout out to Canningvale. I've so much love and respect for Perth and the people in Canningvale.
I mean, I prefer North the Rabarba.
If for everyone in Perth, you'll know this argument, what's better, north or south? You know, Tilla's from the north.
We know it's north, so it's fine.
North on the other side of the river, and I'm from the south. But I think what was so cool about that time was the little community I built at that time. You know, we were doing, I created a fitness class called Staxed.
Was this the one at the park? Hey, was this your park fitness?
No, that was me hustling when I was in PT. No, Staxed was like a group fitness class. Like a different version of F45. And we had one class every week and my friend Travis, a qualified PT, would take the class. I was still studying PT at the time. I was doing one of those online courses, so I wasn't qualified. And, you know, it was a sold out class.
You've always been like a dreamer. You've always had different like ideas, new things and innovator, right?
Always trying. Yeah. Always. I think that's the creative side to it. You know, we had dinner the other night and Marcus said, you know, it's quite interesting that you are good at operations, but also creative. In a lot of businesses, it's one or the other. It's why creative directors hire CEOs, or I like both. So we had the fitness class. The supplement shop was going great for 2 years. I printed T-shirts on these horrible singlets. It was like a singlet with a hoodie.
You printed your logo?
We printed the word Muscle Stacks, and the slogan was, I am. I am confident. I'm belief. I am. And then the
gorgeous
one was called I Am Staxed. And I know you're mocking me. And
no,
I
love it.
Everyone in the gym was wearing this. Like those shirts would sell out. Everyone in the gym was wearing
it. It's a community, right? You build a community. And that's at the end of the day, people just want to be a part of something.
We all want to be part of each other. I think what I built, you know, what I learned at that point was the value of us all coming together, wearing a horrible T-shirt and celebrating this horrible T-shirt. Because it's not about the T-shirt. It's about the fact that we're all wearing this thing. So it means we all mean something to each other and we're all equal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where a lot of people disconnect. So, you know, these are, when I'm talking about the story, I'm actually realizing the fundamentals of everything we're doing today.
Yeah.
Nothing's changed. It's quite funny, isn't it?
I still am stacked.
Staxed. I received a text message from one of the printers that live in Sydney the other day. It was a 10-year anniversary from him. Because he used to make these T-shirts for me, and he sent me this photo. And he's like, I can't believe that you made these T-shirts and sold them 10 years ago, and here we are today.
You didn't have a website or anything. You were just selling it yourself.
Everything was direct to consumer. I would be delivering supplements to someone's house at night, and
I think that's it as well. You hustled, like you were delivering. You'd finish your job and you'd drive the orders out to people then and there.
There would be no stop. Like people would call me, text me for an order. I would grab from the store, drive to wherever they are. You know, sometimes it's an hour away. You know, at that point, the cost of operation was probably too expensive.
Fuel, yeah.
I wasn't focused on that. I was focused on making sure that you keep the community happy. And, you know, you're making a difference in people's lives. I think one of the sucky things about running an e-commerce business is we don't get to like engage or like see people's reactions. I think back in those days, what I loved was being able to deliver a bowl of a tub of protein.
I thought you were going to say bowl of pasta. I was like, that's another
a tub of protein. And then it progressed to hoodies. Like the hoodies was massive. So at that point, everything was going smooth. That's when e-commerce started becoming a thing. And this was around 2013 at that stage. I was doing this for about a year and a half, almost 2 years. So 2013, 2014, I decided, look, I got to do something bigger. There was this website called bodybuilding.com at the time. And I thought, I'm already selling supplements. How can we create the bodybuilding.com of Australia? And I decided to find a web developer. I had no clue about any of this. I had not a single idea about anything to do with the internet at that point. And it's important because the realization is that growing up in school, we never had internet or computers. The first computer I got was when I moved to Australia in 2008. And I was like, wow, this is living. So I didn't understand the internet really. Found a developer company in Perth that helped us build a website. And I had all these ideas and all these dreams. I learned a lot about dreams. And they built this website. The first version of the website cost $22,000. I didn't have $22,000 to build this, so I took out a personal loan, and then it was $22,000. Every time I wanted to make adjustments, it was an extra couple of thousand. And by the end of it, I think the website cost us like $30,000 or $40,000 from a personal loan without making a cent back, which was a tragedy. It was a horrible idea because I had no way of paying it back because the whole business was to try and build this thing so it can make money to pay itself back. And that was the first massive mistake I made when I learned about not having a real plan and having a dream with no follow-up idea. So I scrapped the whole idea. I had all this debt at that point to play with. I was also incurring debts in the other business because I was buying product and I was adding more things to the business, and I was buying equipment and I was buying computers, and I was like, all of a sudden it was 80K. And I was like, shit, this is not a great position to be in. So I got another job as well. I think I was working at G-Star at the time, whilst working at the gym reception, whilst trying to sell supplements.
Hoodies.
And I'll get to the hoodies in a second. And then I was doing PT classes on the weekends and group fitness with all the community ladies.
We walked
all
the past. We were in Perth the other week, and Don's like, I used to do PT group fitness classes over here. PT Don.
It was so fun. I had all these mums.
I literally am imagining like a proper aerobics class.
No, it was. And I just made it up. I don't know what I was doing, to be honest. I just had all these
Kanye's workout
church.
Plan songs in my head. Now that's right. Booty work.
It was definitely not that kind of class. I just realized it was really a shit spot to be in. But simultaneously, the way I'm programmed is not to give up. You know, it didn't deter me. I didn't say, I'm not going to pursue this idea. I just transitioned and transformed. Those community t-shirts, the I'm Stacks, Muscle Stacks t-shirts were killing it. And when I say killing it at that stage, you know, guys, it's probably selling, I don't know, like a couple, 20, 30 at a time, and then became 100 or 200. Units. And then it's a funny one. This story is a bit strange because the gym itself wasn't doing too well. The owners were struggling. It took a really bad turn. And I sort of saw this coming and realized I'm pretty screwed if the gym closes down because I didn't really have a backup plan. So I thought, all right, we have to try something a bit different. I realized that Muscle Stacks was too attached to the supplement brand. So I had to rebrand. You know, at the time I loved fashion. I was working at G-Star. I was watching all the fashion shows, but no one in my community or any of my friends understood any of that. It was like the secret passion I had. I was sketching and I was playing with fabrics and I was doing all this stuff in the back end. Started loving a lot of the creatives, creative designers, but it was like a secret project. I don't know why,
but
I wasn't allowed to talk about it. And then I had a dream. It's awkward to say. It's such a weird, cringeworthy moment. But I had a dream that I walked into my gym, and the first girl I saw was wearing a Black Stacks hoodie with a pink logo. And then I looked to my right, and I saw a guy, my best friend, wearing a black hoodie with a Blue Stacks logo. And then I was like, walking up the stairs, and on every stair, this is so cringe. On every stair, it said, one step at a time. And I think I woke up and within that week, I called up the printers and I was like, hey, can we do a hoodie with the Stacks logo? And the printer I was using at the time didn't have hoodies. So I was like, fuck, what am I going to do? And at that time, the only thing that we could do was buy an AS Color hoodie and print your logo on it. So buy an AS Color hoodie, pop the logo on, pop your tags on the product. And I know a lot of your brands are doing it these days, and that's so cool and it's fine. But that's sort of how I started the hoodies, and those hoodies went crazy. I took a photo of a hoodie, put a logo on it, taught myself how to use Photoshop horribly. Like, you know, when you take a photo and you put a text on it, you know, it's supposed to look like a product. This, you saw the text on the product. Terrible Photoshop job. And I was sending this photo around. I was like, hey, pre-selling hoodies.
DMing people on Instagram, Facebook.
As much as I could. I'd show people photos of my phone in the gym. I walk around and be like, hey, want to buy a hoodie? I was playing rugby. I was showing the boys at the club. I was like, hey, you guys want to buy hoodies? And it took me back to when I was walking around in the neighborhoods in South Africa, knocking on doors, trying to sell raffle tickets. Yeah. Like, I had this like transitional thought process of that memory. Anyway, sold so many hoodies. 200-300 hoodies. Had the spreadsheet, like I was just turning around. The turnaround times are quick because you buy it locally and sell it. People were getting on the wait list. And then while I learned about the pre-sale model. That was the moment where I realized people don't mind waiting if you take them on the journey. I showed people photos of me designing the hoodie. I showed them the photos. like people
in selfie of you doing your drawing.
It was literally. It was, you know, iPhone 3, mm-hmm. iPhone 2. I had all these stickers printed on my laptop. It was literally the first generation entrepreneur story. And people bought the hoodies. And I thought, all right, people are liking Stacks. So I'm working at a gym. Majority of my following now is female. What is the next product? Tights. Like at that point, you know, activewear wasn't what it is today. There wasn't every single person trying to start a brand.
It was a lot less saturated back then.
The saturation was so much less. It was still there. There's still brands dominating mm-hmm. the market, but there was an opportunity. And when I did an assessment, I didn't think too far into it. You know, I always say people talk themselves out of great ideas when they overthink it. I didn't think about, you know, market shares and, you know, all I wanted to do was sell tights to the people in the gym. The women that were following me, my friends, girlfriends and wives mm-hmm. and husbands, not girlfriends and wives, their mums and anyone that would buy a pair of tights, that's who I wanted to sell to. And then I would think about, all right, how do we scale? A lot of people start with like, how am I going to start this and how do I become a
millionaire? Yeah,
yeah. It's find the starting point. So looked on the website, AS Color didn't do tights. I was like, okay, where am I going to get tights from? Jumped into Alibaba. Found a supplier that did leggings. I bought the leggings directly from the supplier and it was black. And I thought, okay, so the issue you have when you're buying directly from factories now is they have an MOQ, minimum order quantity. And I wasn't selling 300 units at a time of anything that I was doing. So I wanted to do different options because if I did one product and if I had 300 of one product, it wouldn't sell. But if I could take a pair of black tights and print like three different variations of color logos and whatever, all of a sudden I had three different products. And I wanted to do something creative as an artist. So I designed these blue pair of leggings and they had different patches of blue on them. And you posted it the other day. We reshared it the other day for Instagram for memory. And we'll talk about that at a later stage. I still love that product. So I ordered these in, got them printed, and all of a sudden I had a pack of four. So I thought, all right, how can I sell these? So I literally DM'd every single girl contact I had on Instagram and Messenger, and I was like, hey, selling these tights. But what was horrible about the experience was I took one photo of a friend. She was wearing the tights, and I duplicated them, and I put the logo placements on the same photo in different colors. And then they came in different lengths, but I didn't have a sample of the shorter length. So I drew a line and I said, the 7/8 will fit here. And I think maybe we'll try and insert this photo if we can find it, because you'll understand how basic it was. And it also taught me that your marketing, it doesn't have to be perfect, people were buying it because I was selling it to them. So I DM'd everyone and my goal was to sell, I did a four pack for $250 pair of tights. Amazing. And I sold them all before they even arrived.
Wow.
So I raised the money, ordered them in, you know, it took 2 or 3 weeks and people were waiting. And I got this whole box delivered at the gym. It was quite bad because I was working at a reception ship and this whole delivery came straight to reception and I started unpacking things and I got a photo and I was like, oh, this is probably bad unpacking it while on shift, but I didn't really care at that point. So that was sort of the start of Stax the brand, but it got really bad at that point because I had taken as much money as I could of my personal money, anything that I had left, and put it into this product. I then still owed, I think, $80,000-ish, or $60,000 or $70,000 at that point, on the failed attempt of the e-commerce brand, plus having to pay back suppliers for the supplements. And then I remember doing this really bad thing. I needed to get to China while I was doing all these jobs. I needed to get to China to try and find a factory to help me with all the other ideas and expand. And I remember
making a little crop top to match the
time. Yeah, literally. Yeah. But we needed to get to China to go to the trade fair. And maybe I'll talk about the trade fair in a different story. But I jumped online and I did the worst thing you can ever think of and tried to apply for credit cards because the banks weren't giving me any money. I couldn't get a loan anywhere. And I thought, all right, maybe I can get a credit card. So I just jumped online, not having any financial intelligence or understanding the systems. And I started applying for credit cards. And I think I did something like 25-ish applications, which, if you guys understand, will do horrendous things to your credit score. I got 2 credit cards, was able to buy a flight and get to China and come back, maxed that out, came back, found factories. But by the end of that, that was where I was in probably just over $80,000 of debt. Came back a couple of weeks after the landlord seized the gym because the gym went into liquidation. Because we were in such a bad position. Like, so we all lost our jobs, but the shit thing there for me was they took my shop. And, you know, I was young. I didn't really understand how to fight. I didn't know what to do. All my stock, all my computers, all my proteins, you know, I don't even know how much it was worth over there. I rocked up at the gym one day and it was done. And I stood there, couldn't contact the owners, it was the most helpless feeling. So I had nothing, like literally.
And there was no contract.
So. That was the other thing I learned. Like I didn't have a rental agreement. I didn't have a contract of any sort. So even if I try to fight anything, there's nothing you can do. You know, I wouldn't say anyone screwed me over because, you know, I was granted such a great opportunity. The lessons I learned was I didn't have myself set up. I didn't have contracts and I wasn't paying rent. It was just a massive learning experience and I just sort of walked away from that. And a couple of months later, the gym, I think, someone else took the space and opened up a gym. And then they said, oh, you can come and reapply for a job if you want to. And at that point, I think I woke up 1 or 2 days later, just super depressed. I could barely get myself out of bed. And then I just said to myself, I was like, well, you don't have a choice. The only choice is to try and make this work. Literally to try, there isn't another option. What's the other option? I got to go try and work at Foot Locker and earn $400 a week and try and pay back 80,000.
It's the quote, there's something beautiful about rock bottom because the only way is up. Yeah.
Literally. It's a beautiful thought. You know, I often reference that. I don't ever want anyone to go through that. It is a horrible experience. A lot of people can't recover. But if you've ever been in that situation, and I think a lot of entrepreneurs, people that started very successful businesses have hit rock bottom because they know what it feels like. They understand what it tastes like and you realize you never want to be there again. But you also realize it's bad, but you can win it. So, you know, if people are listening to this and they're going through that process, I think it's one of the best things that could happen for you. You just have to find the turning point. So the next day, jumped online, I got paid, I think it was $300 a week from Foot Locker, and I took a subscription out on Shopify, built a website,
So you went back to Foot Locker?
I was still working at Foot Locker throughout this whole process. I was working 3 or 4 jobs. Mm-hmm. After the gym, I picked up another job at a server that would start, I think, my shift would start.
Like a deli.
Like a deli.
Yeah.
And the starting shift was 3 a.m. in the morning, and I'd work till 9. My Foot Locker shift would start at 10. I'd work from 10 to 5. After hours, I was doing youth development to try and earn some extra money. So I'd be getting home at, you know, 10-ish, 11. I'd be packing orders to drop at the – I leave it with my mum so she could drop it at the post office. My brother was helping pack orders. And that was a full cycle for about a year. And so rolling back, I took out a subscription on Shopify. It was $70-something. Spent days at the Dome, at the coffee shop in Perth, and taught myself how to use Photoshop. You know, most Adobe suites, taught myself how to program or build stuff on Shopify and built the website. And I had, you know, 5 or 6 products, all were just localized products, printed logos on them with my specialized tights. And I only set that up to take people's money remotely because people weren't able to transfer money. So I call people up, sell the order, transact with them on Instagram, and I'd be like, here's the link, just make the payment. And that is kind of the first step of how Stack started.
And what was the go with the credit cards? You didn't kind of finish that story?
The credit card, one of the worst things you can do is jump online and do multiple credit applications. You know, everything in your life when it comes to finances is dictated by your credit score and your financial strength in history. So for any young person that hasn't been taught this, here's a great lesson.
And it's not something people are taught.
No, it's something I think it's pretty tragic that we aren't taught this.
I wonder if we're not taught it, so we do make this mistake.
Don't get me, I don't want to go down the conspiracy theory.
The simulation.
the simulation. If there's one thing I love to share with people, I don't like teaching. If I can share something with someone, it's teaching yourself to become financially literate. Do not jump online and do multiple credit applications for cars.
It seems so innocent as well when you jump
online. Well, they set you up.
Yeah.
You get set up on, you'll be online, you'll be like, hey, apply for this credit card and get 100,000 Qantas points. And what do? You jump on, apply for the credit card and then
get your Qantas points.
Because the algorithm has picked up the fact that you're engaging on this credit card. What do? You jump on Amex and you're trying to apply for this credit card. And all of a sudden you think, wow, you get your first one and it's easy. Oh, I got a $3,000 credit limit. And so mine was out of necessity. I applied for all these credit cards. Every single credit card takes a point off your score. At the end of it, post all the loans.
Off your credit score.
And the challenge with that is it sits with you for 5 or 6 years. So you can't go to a bank and get a home loan. You can't get a car loan. To be honest, even Telstra will look
at you. Yeah, I was going to say, even your phone.
Your phone looks at your credit score, but it also deducts you from your credit score. So, guys, just be super vigilant on applying for credit.
So every time you apply for credit, you lose points. And then every time people want to look at your credit, you also lose points.
You can lose points, and they look at the points you've lost, and it's...
And it takes years to rebuild a credit score. And in order to get a loan, you need a healthy credit score.
Yeah, and I'll tell you guys a story quick about the loan. I remember going to a bank. You know, this is one of my favorite stories. I told this to one of the banks that work with us now. Went to the bank and I was like, hey, you know, I need a $20,000 loan for this business. I need to buy some product. This is what I'm doing. The bank manager literally looked at me. It was one of the most degrading moments in my experience. But these things absolutely motivate the shit out of me. And I absorbed like a champion, and I just gave him the biggest smirk and walked out. And he said to me, he looked at my situation, which was bad. And
the credit scores.
Yeah. My situation was bad on paper, which I understand, but his response to me was, this business will never work for you. You're never going to make it. You should quit now and go find a job. That's what he said to me. And I looked at him and I thought, all right, I'm going to show you. I'm going to prove that to you. And that sits with me. I can remember his face. I can see your face, but bro, you've probably seen the ads or something.
He's probably wearing his flex cap right now.
reach out to me because I'm going to send you a hamper because you motivated me in ways you'll never understand. And that was a profound lesson because in our community, a lot of people support us. So I'm never going to sit here and be like, oh, everyone was doubting us. No one thought we'd do it.
You had support right from the start though, it sounds like.
Fundamentally, people were in our corner, my corner. And even when we got together, you know, I think because we are so passionate about what we do and we just love what we do and we love the people that are on the journey with us, people support that. But there were definitely parts where people were just shitting on me, and that was one of them. There's quite a few others. But that never deterred the vision. That never deterred what we wanted to do. If anything, that just – is gaslighting the right phrase for that?
No, it's quite the opposite. I think it motivated you.
It motivated. It lit the gas.
It
lit a fire. And, you know, I look at that. But that's one of the things I like to share with people. You know, just becoming a bit financially intelligent. There's a lot of books you can read and podcasts you can listen to.
Do you have a recommendation? This will be the wrap up of episode one.
Yeah.
Do you have a recommendation of where a book that changed your life? I know what it's going to be, but what do you want to leave the audience with?
No, I think the one that's like the fourth. I have the series of books that I always try and tell people to listen to in order. The first one and two, if you want to understand, for me, financial literacy and have an idea on how you want to set yourself up. The fundamental book I always start with is Richest Man of Babylon. That book is amazing because it teaches you trade and commerce, but the basic principles in prehistoric times. It sometimes actually reads about it reads like reading the Bible. So the stories it tells are so relevant. And then I usually advise people to read Rich Dad Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki.
That's what I thought you were going to say.
Which are one of my favorite books because it tells the story of the best of both worlds, you know, what it's like to be poor-minded but also, you know, rich-minded. And most of us can relate to that because, most of us are caught in between both environments sometimes. So those two together are important.
And they're not light reads, though, are they?
They're not light reads, but for me, they sort of teach you the fundamentals.
Is there a footnotes available?
I'm sure you'll probably listen to the audiobook. And then I bought, what's the book? I thought you were going to actually think about the book that I bought you, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People.
Oh, my God, when we first started. I don't think we were even dating.
It was literally, I know, you were so right. I gave it to you. We were still
weird.
Flirting. And then I gave you a present one day in my store. Maybe that's what.
A present. And the present was like this massive book that had so many words.
And I wrote, you an inspirational letter. We should read
you
that
You did.
Together.
And it said like, Matilda, blah, 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 blah. Regards, wishing you all the best, regards, Donovan or something.
Oh, my God.
I thought, why the fuck?
I'm surprised.
I didn't read it.
If I did that today, that would give you the ick.
Yeah, I can't say I read the book, but I am glad that we didn't have icks back then because that would have been interesting. I know sometimes you gave me a red rose. That was a lot nicer. I preferred the red rose novel over the book. It's so funny. Like, I'm actually so glad. I think we'll wrap it up, but I'm so glad that you were able to kind of share your story because we haven't heard it in depth. Even I, was introduced to things that I didn't necessarily know. I
just think it's nice to, like, go back.
It's, nice to reflect. Yeah, we don't have the opportunity.
Every time we retell the story, we think about things and it unlocks, things that we've been through that
have shaped us.
That have shaped us. And, we start thinking about, we went through that and it sort of motivates us for what's coming.
Or we went through something or you went through something and it taught you how to handle something else. And I think that's probably one of the best things about both you and I individually is we've always had the mindset that never a failure, always a lesson, right? Like if something goes wrong, we always are able to flip it and it's probably an annoying characteristic to some.
It's one of your most annoying characteristics.
Things aren't that bad. That's my most annoying characteristic.
You are the queen of positivity.
I don't think I'm sickly positive though.
No, you.
I'll spit my toys.
You're not the person you go to if you want to have a whinge or a bitch.
Because I'm a flipper.
Yeah.
Take that and run with it. I will just if something goes wrong, I can think, yeah, this sucks, but we're going to turn it around. And what can we learn from it? How can we grow? And I always think that. And I think there's always a lesson. Again, it's the same thing. Turn up at the supplement store, turn up at the gym and your supplement store is done. That fucking sucks. But we can't just sit there and mourn it. We have to keep going forward and work out what the lesson is and run with it. And it's the same. The bank person won't give you the loan and they say some nasty things. Again, fucking sucks. But we can't just sit there and cry. Let's move on. I think as well, a lot of people don't share the hardships and when things are going wrong, share it then and there because you don't know if it's going to be going right and you're not in the mood to jump on social and talk about all the bad things in the moment without necessarily knowing that you're going to get through it. Or it's hard if you, I think a lot of people that have had success haven't necessarily shared the whole journey, because when you're in the journey, you don't see it as part of the journey. You just see it as like the be all and the end all and the chaos. So I like having this pod where we can actually dig deep and really break down the things.
It's like therapy.
Yeah, it's kind of like therapy. But it's true. Hey, like we're like going backwards and like really realizing like all the things that shaped us and how we learned the lessons and how we became like who we are today in business.
But I think that's why we decided we want to take it's why we love the podcast. Mm. It's why it's really is an opportunity for us to also do self-reflection. But I think our story adds so much value to people's lives that are going through the same process, because I wish I had someone's story I could like look at and be like, oh, okay, so they did this or they did that, or that's how they're coping with this. Because yeah, a lot of the stuff we deal with, we don't share, and a lot of stuff we won't share for maybe 4 or 5 years, because I want to win at it. Mm. I want to beat it. And then I want to sit with you and then we'll share it.
I think it's something, maybe a takeaway from this, if you guys want to grab a takeaway, is to say like, grab a takeaway. It's like Chinese order. If there's something that you want to take away from this episode, let it be like, if you're going through a hardship or something's, you know, you're going through a problem or a challenge, it is simply that. It's a challenge that is going to level you up for the next part of your life. And you might not see it now, but it truly is.
Tell your story about video games and then we have to wrap up.
Okay, so the way I look at life is like it's a video game. So you're on a level, things are cruisy. And then when you know, you're beating the baddies, you're doing the stuff, you're going to work, you're kicking goals, whatever. And then at the end of the level, there's always like a baddie that you have to face in order to get to the next level. There's always a challenge. There's always something that you need to get through. And once you beat that baddie, you go on to the next level. Things are harder, but you can manage it, because you've completed the levels below, and the levels below have taught you how to complete the next level. And I literally think life is literally like a video game. Like,
we live like The Sims, but
yeah, The Sims.
Our life is a video game.
It is.
I reckon we've got to cut it, because if we don't stop now, we're going to tell all our stories in one.
I hope you like the new format. I hope you guys enjoyed the episode.
Thank you guys so much for tuning in. We love you. We appreciate you. And if you like the podcast, /TikTok and now YouTube, share with a friend.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Love you.